From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Welcome to Washington Watch, where we shine a spotlight on the intersection of faith, politics, and culture in our nation's capital and beyond. So, don't touch that dial. Washington Watch starts now.
Today, I'm here to proclaim to all those who gnash their teeth and demand to wipe the state of Israel off the map and attack our innocent Jewish students this simple truth. Neither Israel nor these Jewish students on this campus will ever stand alone.
That was House Speaker Mike Johnson on the campus of Columbia University yesterday. We'll get the latest on the pro-Hamas Palestinian protests that are erupting on university campuses across the nation from Washington Watch correspondent Victoria Marshall in just a moment. We'll also take a closer look at the alarming rise of anti-Semitism in the United States that is linked to the Jewish state of Israel. Now, the question is this a political issue or is it really a spiritual matter that has political implications? We're going to have a conversation about the church, Jewish people, and Israel with Pastor Gary Hamrick of Cornerstone Chapel in Leesburg, Virginia, later here on Washington Watch. On the political front, how damaging are statements like this from Nancy Pelosi to Israel and to the United States?
We reject the policy and the practice of Netanyahu. Terrible. What could be worse than what he has done in response? First of all, the exposure. See, his intelligence person resigned. He should resign.
That, of course, was former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi calling upon the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, to resign. We'll be joined by the former U.S. Ambassador to Israel, David Friedman. And Democrats appear to be overjoyed to see abortion in the headlines. But will that be the case if Republicans stop running from it and start defending the unborn? We'll talk with the Attorney General of Idaho, Raul Labrador, who defended his state's pro-life law before the United States Supreme Court yesterday. Attorney General Labrador joins me in just a moment. In our federalist system of government, the states serve as a check on the federal government. While the federal government has systematically over the years attempted to buy off the states with federal money, states can and should stand up to the lawlessness of the federal government. That's what our founders intended. Well, multiple states are announcing that they will not comply with the Biden administration's Title IX rule changes that attempt to erase the biological distinctions between males and females.
We have sent him a letter. We have sent the secretary a letter saying we will not comply with this. We have sent all the schools a letter telling the schools not to comply with this. This is completely illegal and an unconstitutional rule. It endangers our girls. But this is Joe Biden's latest attempt to attack the states, to attack families and American values.
That was the superintendent of education in Oklahoma, Ryan Walters. Earlier this week, the superintendent of education in Louisiana, Dr. Cade Brumley, told schools in my home state not to observe the new Title IX rules. Dr. Brumley joins us later here on this edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com, lots of resources there for you and contact information for our guest. Also, all of our programs are archived at TonyPerkins.com. Well, the outburst of anti-Israel and pro-Hamas student demonstrations at U.S. colleges spread last night as clashes with police led to dozens of arrests on campuses throughout the country. Joining me now with an update is Washington Watch news correspondent Victoria Marshall. Victoria, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
So another rough night on many campuses. Give us the latest.
Yeah, well, just multiple protests have erupted across the country in our nation's major universities and Ivy League schools ever since Columbia University protesters established an encampment last week and hundreds of demonstrators were arrested. We've just been seeing that all over the country. And in response to that, a lot of these schools have been arresting the protesters, but also closing their campuses, moving classes online. Even the University of Southern California today just announced that they will be canceling their May 10th graduation ceremony because of just uncertainties with security. So that's going to be devastating to the students who are going to be missing out on an in-person graduation ceremony.
Victoria, does this appear to have reached a zenith, or is this still continuing to spread?
Some of the encampments have been dissolved as students have been arrested for illegally trespassing, but others are still remaining strong. I mean, the Columbia University encampment is still active as we speak. So right now, that remains to be seen.
All right. Victoria Marshall, thanks so much for the update. Well, in other news, yesterday the Supreme Court heard oral arguments challenging a pro-life law in the state of Idaho. Now, this is the first time the court has considered a state's law regarding the sanctity of human life and abortion since the overturn of Roe v. Wade in 2022. Idaho's law protects the life of the baby unless the mother's life is in danger. Now, the Biden administration has argued this violates federal law, requiring federally funded hospitals to provide care to emergency room patients. Now, the state argues that the federal government is essentially seeking to turn emergency rooms into abortion facilities. Joining me now to discuss this is Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador, who defended Idaho's law before the Supreme Court yesterday. Attorney General Labrador, welcome to Washington Watch. Good to see you again.
It's great to be with you.
Well, first, explain to our viewers and listeners what the issue was before the court yesterday.
Yes, it's a pretty simple issue. It's actually the Biden administration is arguing that EMTALA, which is a 40-year law that was signed by President Reagan, requires hospitals to provide abortions in instances where the health of the mother is in jeopardy in some sense. And the reality is that EMTALA doesn't address abortion. All EMTALA does is it addresses the issue of whether access to health care is available to people that are indigent, whether hospitals can turn away people who don't have the means to pay for hospitalization or ER services.
So this is essentially trying to turn emergency rooms in the state of Ohio, in Idaho, into abortion clinics.
That's exactly what they're trying to do. They looked around the United States at different ways to get around the Dobbs decision, and this was the easiest way for them to do it. They came to Idaho. They filed a lawsuit against the state claiming that our law was in violation or that it was preempted by the federal law. But the reality is that EMTALA does not address abortions. And in fact, as Justice Alito mentioned several times yesterday, EMTALA actually says that the life of the unborn child should also be protected. So I think it turns EMTALA on its head. It turns jurisprudence for the last 40 years on its head. And I hope that the Supreme Court can agree with the state of Idaho that after Dobbs, the states have a right and an opportunity to decide for themselves what the law should be regarding abortion.
Well, General Labrador, this would not be contained to Idaho if the federal government, the Biden administration, is successful in forcing this in Idaho. Will they not roll on to other states and do the same?
Well, they already have, Tony. What if you remember, right after the Dobbs decision, they sent a letter to every hospital in the United States saying that if they receive any federal funding, that they must provide abortions regardless of what the state law. And they make the claim in that letter that the abortion laws of the various states was actually preempted by EMTALA, which EMTALA has never been found to deal with abortion or even with any specific practice of law in non-abortion related matters. That our attorney who represented the state before the U.S. Supreme Court did a great job explaining to the justices that this was a misreading of the statute.
So if Idaho prevails in defending its law, this could have implications for other states across the nation.
Well, it will have national implications because it will tell the states that they can decide. California can decide that they want to have abortions, and the state of Idaho, as we have decided, we want that we will have life-affirming positions in our state statutes. Our law allows abortions in cases of rape, incest, and the life of the mother. Our law is really clear that there's a subjective standard that the doctors, if they believe that the life of the mother is in jeopardy, that they can have an abortion. And we believe that our law is clear, it's unambiguous, and that it should be protected and upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court.
And just to underscore once again, this is a law that was adopted by the people of Idaho.
Correct, by our elected representatives, absolutely.
So I find this very interesting, Raul, that, you know, the Democrats, the Biden administration, representative of the Democratic Party, pushing abortion every way that they can. And in fact, they've made it very clear through the Women's Health Protection Act that they would like to see abortion all the way up to birth, funded by taxpayers. I'm grateful for Idaho taking a stand on this issue, defending the right of the people of Idaho to determine what the law is going to be. But too many Republicans have gone silent on this issue. And I think that's very troubling and dangerous going into this fall's election.
I think it's important for Republicans to understand this is a very difficult issue. This is an issue that the media tends to exaggerate the implications. But the reality is that most people believe that abortion should be rare in the United States and should have very limited exceptions. And the state of Idaho has limited exceptions, has rape, incest, and the life of the mother. And I think most people agree with that. They agree that in other circumstances, abortion should not be allowed. The state of Idaho at least has adjudicated that several times. The legislature has spoken on that several times. And I think when you show that it's the other side that is extreme, that they want abortions available at all instances of the stages of pregnancy, I think that's the position that should be considered extreme. And I think when you take the time to explain to people the differences between the two positions, I think most people are closer to the Idaho position than they are to the more extreme position.
I would think you're absolutely right, but it requires a state like Idaho to actually fight for that law and for the right of the people of Idaho to make that decision. Other states have to do the same. But in order to reveal the extreme nature of the Biden administration and the Democratic Party, you have to engage in a conversation. And I think too many Republicans have gone silent on this issue when we need not be silent on it.
I agree. I think we should defend life at all opportunities that we have and respect other people. I think that the key is to make sure that you're respectful in your conversations with other people. When you have people with dissenting voices, when they have alternative views on these issues, I think you should be respectful, but you should be forceful and encourage them to understand that we value life. You know, the issue that we brought before the Supreme Court, we clearly stated that both EMTALA and Idaho's laws were passed to protect women and to protect unborn children. And I think that's what people need to understand.
And I think that's something that most Americans can support. Attorney General Raul Labrador, great to see you again. Thanks so much for joining us today.
It's always good to see you. Have a wonderful day.
All right. The Attorney General of the state of Idaho, former congressman from Idaho, Raul Labrador. All right. We just need to continue to encourage our elected officials to take a stand for life. Now, that issue is not going to go away. We have to continue to build the culture of life, bringing an understanding of the humanity of the unborn to the American people and the well-being of their mothers. I mean, this conversation must continue. And so we must require and call upon our elected officials to do just that. All right, when we come back, the former ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, joins me to talk about Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and other Democrats calling upon the Prime Minister of Israel, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, to resign in the middle of a war. What does that say? Don't go away. We're back after this.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Good to have you with us. The website is tonyperkins.com. Right, as I discussed briefly yesterday, former Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi told an Irish television news program that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu should resign his position as he presents an obstacle to the two-state solution. Now, this remark follows similar comments from Senate Democrat leader Chuck Schumer, as well as constant leaks from the Biden administration critical of the Israeli prime minister. Now, how should we respond to attacks on the leader of a U.S. ally currently at war following a terrorist attack? And does this undermine Israel's standing in the global community? And does it hurt the United States? Joining me now to discuss this is David Friedman, who serves as the U.S. ambassador to Israel during the Trump administration, where he was a part of the group responsible for the Abraham Accords and moving U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. He is the founder of the Friedman Center for Peace Through Strength and the author of the book Sledgehammer, How Breaking with the Past Brought Peace to the Middle East. Ambassador Friedman, welcome to Washington Watch, and I wish you a happy Passover.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it very much.
So in the middle of a multi-front war that poses the greatest threat to Israel since its founding nearly 76 years ago, what do you make of two prominent leaders of the Democratic Party calling for the Prime Minister of Israel to resign?
Look, I think it's a gut punch to the state of Israel. It's a gut punch to all those who support it, to all the people who are risking their lives and in many cases sacrificing their lives to protect the state of Israel against the most vile forces of evil in the world, who frankly hate America just as much as they hate the state of Israel. It's the middle of a war, as you point out. I mean, it's an incredibly difficult, challenging environment under the best of circumstances. And Pelosi and Schumer are just making it worse for Israel because this is their leader. Look, at some point in the future, you know, they'll have an election. They'll choose, you know, whoever they choose as their prime minister. Maybe it'll be Netanyahu, maybe somebody else, but not now. Nobody, even the people in Israel who despise Netanyahu, are rallying around him now as the leader of the country in a time of war. And so what Pelosi and Schumer are doing is undermining Israel. It's, I think, bringing great disgrace to the United States. I think it's making other countries really doubt whether they can trust America as an ally when things get tough. And I think it reveals what I've known for some time, which is that whether it's Schumer or Pelosi, these are people devoid of principles. These are people who are shameless head counters, and they're looking around right now in an election year and seeing a lot of energy right now among young people who are hostile to Israel, and they want to kind of maintain the option for those votes. And that's all this is about. It's just really shameless.
But Ambassador, the media kind of enables this. Because think about this for a moment. If Republicans, who are many of whom have questioned what's happening in Ukraine, as Putin, once again sets his sights as the spring comes on moving into Kyiv, there's been some problems with accountability of the funding there, other issues of how that war has been executed. What if Republicans would have called for Zelensky to resign? I mean, I think the press would have gone crazy.
Oh, of course. Of course they would have. Israel doesn't get a fair shake in the domestic press. I mean, thank God for people like you and a few others who will support Israel and report the facts fairly. It's a huge issue for the state of Israel. They've been trying any number of ways to penetrate this wall of ignorance. I would say a wall of hatred. Not with much success. I mean, you would think that a nation that was invaded by bloodthirsty terrorists who burned babies, raped women, slaughtered people in their beds, took 250 hostages, continue to hold 130 hostages, you would think they would not be garnering much sympathy anywhere in the world. But, right. Look, they have... you have colleges all across the country, including my alma mater, I'm very much ashamed of it right now, Columbia, where, people are actually saying, we are Hamas. It's not right. About peace. It's not about a ceasefire. It's about destroying Israel. And I guess this view had been there in a latent state for quite a while, but it's all coming out to the surface.
So with that in mind, I want to ask you a personal question, if I can. You and I are friends. Only someone who is Jewish can really answer this question, given the history of what has happened to the Jewish people. With the rise of anti-Semitism that we're seeing now across the United States and really around the world, and it was manifesting before these university campuses erupted here in the U.S. post October 7th, with the anti-Semitism on the march, while at the same time the place of safety for Jewish people around the globe, Israel, facing this existential threat. How do you approach this new reality?
Well, unfortunately, it's an old reality. And, we just finished our Passover Seder two nights ago. And we say this at every Seder. We say in every generation, they rise up against us and God comes to our aid. And what holds us together is the Bible. The Bible stands, it stands with us as our protection. God stands with us with our protection. Look, go back 3,500 years. There aren't a lot of nations right now around from that period. There are no more Canaanites or Jebusites or Phoenicians, we're all that's left of that, of antiquity. And it's because of the book. It's because the book has held us together and God has protected us. And what this does, Tony, is it just reinforces our faith and makes us cling to that, our biblical heritage and the words of God with greater strength.
And it is that book that unites us as Christians to the Jewish community and standing for them and standing for Israel. Ambassador, always great to see you, and thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Well, thank you, Tony. Thank you for your friendship and for your support for the Jewish people in the state of Israel.
Absolutely. And folks, I do want to encourage you to be a part of Standing with Israel, praying for and standing with Israel. May the 19th is a special Sunday. Pray for and stand with Israel Sunday. You can be a part of that as a church, as individuals. Simply text the word Israel to 67742. I believe this is a critical moment in which the church must stand with Israel. We're going to talk about this a little bit later in the program when Pastor Gary Hamrick joins me as to why Christians, people of the book, should be standing with Israel and the Jewish people. So that's still to come on this edition of Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Again, if you would like to join the effort to pray for and stand with Israel, text the word Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. Sunday, May the 19th, you can be a part of that. You can find out more by texting Israel to 67742. All right, as I mentioned at the top of the program, the Biden administration released its radical revisions to Title IX last week, which now includes gender identity as a protected class, essentially eradicating women's rights and their private spaces, destroying women's sports. Now, before these rules take effect on August the 1st, education leaders in a growing number of states, red states, I might add, have stepped forward saying no. They're not going to bend the Biden administration's redefinition of sex. Now, how will this play out? And will other states follow suit? Joining me now to discuss this is Dr. Cade Brumley, Superintendent of Education for the state of Louisiana, which was among the first states to take a stand. Dr. Brumley, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks, Tony. Thanks for having me.
And let me commend you for taking a stand. Florida is taking a stand, Oklahoma, those states that are not giving in to this nonsense. Before we discuss the actions you've taken, tell us why the Biden administration's Title IX rewrite is so misguided and will not work.
Look, Tony, this is just a bridge too far. It's plain and simply an overreach. It flies in the sense of face of common sense. Basically, the Biden administration is inserting the words gender identity instead of simply using what we've come to know and understand as the provisions in Title IX of biological sex. The problems that I see initially, one, there are going to be constitutional challenges from the First Amendment standpoint, freedom of speech. Two, this seeks to dismantle the longtime rights of females for equal opportunity in sports competitions. And three, something that's not getting much attention that I'm concerned about, is I'm afraid it's going to create additional bureaucracies on school campuses in an effort to police all of these claims of discrimination. And so those are three of the primary issues for which I'm concerned. And for the for those reasons, and obviously my work with our Attorney General in the state of Louisiana, Liz Merle, our Governor Jeff Landry, we have asked school systems across the state to pause and do not implement at this time these radical shifts to Title IX.
So you've asked the schools not to implement these federal guidelines. What are the next steps? How do you see this playing out? Because I know every state's a little different in how the educational system works, but I think Louisiana is a good indicator.
Yeah, look, this is reckless. It endangers children. It seeks to dismantle protections for women. One of my primary concerns in the state of Louisiana is it creates a challenge because we have the Fairness in Women's Sports Act. Our legislature passed the Fairness in Women's Sports Act that says sports competitions in the state of Louisiana are to be separated on the basis of biological sex unless they're co-ed in nature. And so it's contrary to that. Next, our legislature is considering what's called the Given Name Act, which means classroom teachers are to call their students by the name on their birth certificate unless the parent requests otherwise in writing, which, again, is just common sense. So we are working with our AG now. We are exploring all options available to challenge the Biden administration on this reckless revision to Title IX.
Have they linked this to federal funding to education in your state?
They have, Tony. Look, I've been in contact with the USDA, with the U.S. Department of Education for nearly 2 years on this particular issue. And I've asked them the question, are you serious that you would consider taking federal funds to feed some of our poorest, most vulnerable students their breakfast and their lunch? I've asked, are you serious that they would withhold funds for students with exceptionalities who need additional support? And I've asked if they're serious about withholding funds for students who are in most need in terms of their economic conditions. And unfortunately, all of that is in play right now. And I think that that is what they are dangling over the heads of all of the states. But again, I'm proud to be in the state of Louisiana. I'm proud to work with our team here, and we will challenge this particular revision because it is a challenge against our sovereignty in the state of Louisiana.
Final question for you, sir. Are you confident that the schools will follow your direction on this until it's resolved at the state level?
Look, frankly, I believe that the schools are relieved in the state of Louisiana. They're relieved to see the guidance that we've provided. Many of them obviously are heading off into summer break very soon, and they were curious about, you know, how are they going to respond to this before the beginning of next school year. And so we believe that they will comply. They will take this pause, give us the opportunity to go through this 1,500-plus page document of these revisions and advise them accordingly.
Amazing. Dr. Brumley, I want to thank you for joining us today and bringing us up to date on what is happening in the Bayou State. But also, I want to thank you and commend you for all the fine work you've done in the state of Louisiana and standing firm for conservative constitutional principles.
Yeah, thanks again. It's an honor to serve the great people of the state of Louisiana, and I think our best days are ahead.
I would agree. That's Dr. Cade Brumley from Louisiana, Superintendent of Education. And folks, look, push back on this nonsense, all right? Contact your Superintendent of Education. You can start with your school board. But we should not put up with this nonsense. It's dangerous to our children. All right, after the break, the alarming rise of anti-Semitism in the U.S. We're going to talk about that next. Don't go away.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. A couple of housekeeping announcements. As I mentioned at the top of the program, I'm going to talk about this more, but May the 19th, Pray For and Stand With Israel Sunday. To find out more about that, you can text Israel to 67742. By the way, if you've not yet caught on, we have one number, just different keywords. So 67742 is the number you want to keep handy. Yesterday, we were talking about the World Health Organization. All right, we were talking about the upcoming meeting that is taking place, the 77th gathering, which is May the 27th through the June 1st, in which they will be considering this global pandemic accord. As we've talked about, this is a global power grab. Well, through the end of the week, the Department of Health and Human Services, which is going to be leading the U.S. delegation to Geneva next month, is accepting written comments via email regarding this issue. It's bad, all right? It's bad. We've got multiple resources available for you on that. But if you'd like to weigh in on this while there's still time, text the word WHO, W-H-O, to 67742. That's WHO to 67742. All right, ever since the October 7th terrorist attacks, we've seen the Biden administration's support for Israel, you know, kind of unravel as they pursued the policies of the left and appeasement to Israel's enemies. And I've discussed from my recent trip to Israel, Israeli leaders and citizens recognize that American Christians, Bible-believing Christians, have emerged as few of the remaining supporters of the state of Israel. However, as I've discussed supporting Israel, I've gotten messages from those who disagree. Now, they are in the minority, but some claim that, well, the modern state, Jewish state of Israel, is not the same as the Israel of the Bible, nor are the Jewish people the same people of the Bible. Quite sure who they are. Therefore, the promises of the Bible that those who bless Israel will not, that, well, let me just read it from Genesis chapter 12, where God called to Abram. He said, I will make you a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. You know, I've read through that many, many times. I do not see an expiration date on that. See, I strongly disagree that the modern state of Israel has nothing to do with Israel, the Bible. I believe what we've witnessed is the unfolding of biblical prophecy right before our very eyes. I don't know about you, but I want to be on God's side. He says he's bringing Israel back. He's going to gather them from all of the nations back to their home. And that began, I believe, in 1948. And I want to stand with God and the people, the Jewish people. But don't take it just for me. Joining me now to discuss this, Pastor Gary Hamrick, senior pastor of Cornerstone Chapel in Leesburg, Virginia, a great friend and a great friend of Israel and Jewish people. Pastor Gary, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Always good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
So let's just kind of jump into this. You actually preached a message right after October the 7th, essentially why we need to stand with Israel. There are some today, and there's a technical name for it, replacement theology, where many hold that the church replaced Israel, therefore the Jewish people, you know, just it doesn't really matter much anymore. I still believe Genesis 12. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, you're right. Replacement theology is a destructive, damaging, and I'll even use the word demonic doctrine that has infiltrated the church. It actually isn't anything new. Even from the second century AD, Justin Martyr, Clement of Alexandria, they talked about this. They called it supersessionism. It's basically the idea, and I think, as I said, I think it's a wrong idea. It's a bad doctrine. It's demonic. But it's basically the idea that the church has replaced Israel in terms of all the promises of the New Testament, and that God is done with Israel, that God only used Israel to accomplish the purpose of bringing a Messiah onto the world scene, but when the Jewish people were part of crucifying Jesus, that God said he's done with the Jewish people, he's done with Israel, and all the promises have been passed on to the church today. I don't believe that's biblical at all. God is not done with Israel, as you alluded to. In Ezekiel 37, God brought the people, the Jewish people from around the world back together to their own homeland. It was a prophecy that Ezekiel made, and it was fulfilled on May the 14th, 1948, when officially Israel was recognized as the Jewish state. And God is not done with the Jewish people. He's not done with the nation of Israel. And there are terrible repercussions for that kind of a thinking, that kind of a doctrine that is so false. There's terrible repercussions for it.
I want to address one of these issues, then I'm going to ask you another question. The idea that the church has replaced the Jewish people, that's Old Testament, that's gone, it's the church now. Then why would Paul write in Romans, post-crucifixion, resurrection, that we are grafted in? We wouldn't be grafted in, we would be the replacement. But we're grafted into the promises that went to the Jewish people.
Yeah, so true. And he also wrote in Romans 11, verse 1, he said, has God cast away his people? And he answers it. He says, certainly not. God is not done with the Jewish people. But this has taken root in a terrible way. In fact, Tony, Martin Luther, as wonderful as he did many things, including the Protestant Reformation, he wrote some pretty anti-Semitic things, and he bought into the whole replacement theology doctrine, and Hitler actually quoted Martin Luther in Mein Kampf as part of his reasons why he should exterminate the Jewish people on the planet, because they are useless now. So this kind of thing is very insidious, and we're seeing it now in the church playing out today, because this is why many pastors, unfortunately, are not supporting Israel in the war against Gaza and what's happened since October the 7th. So now you have Protestant pastors who are saying, well, God is done with the Jewish people, he's done with Israel, and so we're not going to get behind Israel, we're not going to support their right to the land. As you stated earlier in your comments, God hasn't rescinded on his promises from Genesis 12 or from Genesis 15 when he promised the land to the descendants of Abraham, right, Isaac, and Jacob. And we have to be strong about this in our pulpits. Otherwise, we're giving place to this demonic theology. You know, in Revelation 12, it speaks about how the dragon stands perched to devour the woman's child. And it's a bigger, right, picture of how Satan is bent on destroying all things related to Israel and the Jewish people. And it's a terrible doctrine that has slipped into the church.
Well, and the offspring, because it is not just the Jewish people. That's first, but then the church is next. It's people of the book.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and that's why anti-Semitism, I've mentioned this on the program before, but back during my time as chairman of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, holding hearings on the rise of anti-Semitism in Europe, the ambassador for the special rapporteur for religious intolerance, religious persecution at the United Nations stated that it is the canary in the coal mine when you look at anti-Semitism. And history tells us that as well. How else can you explain a nation, Israel, that went away for 2,000 years, coming back into existence in a day, which, yeah, I think that actually says something in Scripture about that, comes back in a day. How else do you explain it other than it is God reconstituting the nation, doing exactly what biblical prophecy says he would do?
It's totally a God thing, and it's the revival of a people group, including a language. You know, the Hebrew language was, for all intents and purposes, kind of extinct other than being in print in scriptures. It wasn't the common spoken language, and it wasn't until guys like Ben Yehuda and Herzl started to revive the ancient language and had it spoken within their families. So when you look at how God brought a people back together, how the revival of an ancient language, this is clearly prophetic, and God is not done with the Jewish people. And to say otherwise is anti-Semitic.
And that would include the land in which they are in. So if you're against Israel, and I've heard that this is not original with me, but if you're against the state of Israel, you're anti-Semitic, because that is what that is, the Jewish state of Israel. And I want to take it one step further, because what we read in Scripture of all of the biblical accounts in Samaria and Judea, the heartland of the Bible, 80% of the things we read about in the Bible happen in Judea and Samaria, which is actually what the Biden administration is proposing that Israel gives away in pursuit of this elusive two-state solution. Again, running counter to what God had promised to give them the land, we're telling them to give up the land. I just think it's a bad idea to be on the opposite side of God.
Yeah, it's a bad idea for sure. And a two-state solution will never work as long as one of those two states is bent on the destruction of the other. So to say that a two-state solution is the solution is not a solution at all when one of them doesn't want the other to exist. And what you see happening now on college campuses, Columbia and NYU and Harvard, and the list goes on, University of Michigan, University of Minnesota, you know, all of this pro-Palestinian protesting is really pro-Hamas protesting, because they're now saying, mm-hmm, we are Hamas. They want the destruction of the nation of Israel. But what's interesting is sometimes when, you know, people refer to the elite Ivy League schools as the best and the brightest, I call them the dumbest and the dimmest right now, because they're calling for the extermination of Israel from the river to the sea, and many of them can't even tell you what river they're talking about. So this anti-Semitism has crept in to our universities. It's crept in, unfortunately, into our pulpits. And listen, God's not done with the Jewish people. And he who touches Israel touches the apple of God's eye. We have to always be praying for the peace of Jerusalem and standing with Israel. Not everything that every nation does is right. I get that.
Right.
But God's not done with the nation of Israel.
Right. And that was actually what I said to the prime minister when I met with him last month. I said, you know, we don't agree with everything you do, but we're standing with you because we're people of the book. And we want the blessing of God. I want to ask you this question, Pastor Gary Hamrick, to help people kind of understand what is happening, this eruption of protest on college campuses. Elected officials unhinged. I mean, we were just talking earlier with the former U.S. ambassador to Israel, Dr. David Friedman, about political leaders calling for Prime Minister Netanyahu to resign in the middle of a war. I mean, this just defies common sense. How can you explain what is happening? It's beyond politics. I mean,
it is.
This is spiritual in a sense. You quoted from Revelation, I think chapter 13, a few moments ago. We cannot see this as believers apart from the spiritual forces that are at work in our day.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. At our Wednesday night service last night, I said to our congregation when we took time to pray, because here Israel is, this is the middle of Passover week for the Jewish people, and we're seeing all of these protests on our college campuses. And I said, listen, folks, this is more than what meets the eye. This is a spiritual issue that is happening. This is a demonic war in the heavenly realms, because Satan, as Jesus said in John 8, is a liar and the father of lies, and he is inciting people to speak lies and to rant on and to declare all these different lies. I mean, I've heard people say, oh, the Hamas didn't behead babies and rape women. Hamas had GoPro cameras on their heads, and they filmed it all. It's like this is the ultimate denial when people are making excuses for terrorism like that. And so when you see people on our college campuses actually saying things that are irrational and aren't even true, you begin to realize this is spiritual. This is something behind all of this, and it's not part of the natural. It's part of the spiritual, and it is demonic. And by the way, Tony, where's the outcry from the administration? Former President Obama is an alumni of Columbia University. Why isn't somebody like him standing up saying, I'm ashamed of what my former school is allowing to take place on their campus? Where is the outcry of the leaders in America today? Because we're culpable if our leaders aren't going to stand up and speak for what is right and true.
I think we've crossed a line, and we're going to begin to see greater definition between the political parties, between our leaders, and really in our society. I mean, it's been happening for years. You know, our elections are narrowly divided, as our country is narrowly divided. But I think it's going to intensify as we see issues like this that are clearly spiritual in at their core, manifesting in the realm of politics. So with that in mind, Pastor Gary Hamrick, before we run out of time, what would you say to number one, to Christians, to believers, Bible-believing Christians, who I would encourage to be in the Word of God, and it helps make sense of all of this, and two, to pastors, what should they be doing in this hour?
Well, I would say to them, read Romans chapter 11, because if you think that God is done with Israel and the Jewish people, you need to rip Romans chapter 11 out of your Bibles. God makes it clear that he's not finished with Israel. In fact, he says in Romans chapter 11, verses 25 and 26, he says that Israel has experienced a hardening in part until the full number of Gentiles has come in. Meaning that's a window for Gentiles, that God is waiting for us to come to the place of salvation. But then in verse 26, he says, and then all Israel shall be saved. Now, that doesn't mean that every single Jewish person will believe in Jesus, but it means certainly God is not done, that there's still a redemptive plan for the Jewish people. So my encouragement to pastors and to Christians would be read Romans 11, understand God's not done with the Jewish people, and pray for the peace of Jerusalem, because it is essential that we're on the right side of this, and God is
Absolutely.
For Israel, and he is not done with the Jewish people. So pray for them.
All right, Pastor Gary Hamrick, we're going to leave it there, but I want to thank you for joining us today and for your leadership.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate you as well. God bless.
All right, folks, make plans now to join us on May the 19th for Pray For and Stand with Israel Sunday. Text Israel to 67742. Got to leave it there. Until next time, I encourage you to take the words of the Apostle Paul. When you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action.
For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.